Welcome to Appearance Matters, the podcast, the appearance psychology podcast brought to you by the Centre for Appearance Research, a world-leading research centre based at the University of the West of England in Bristol, investigating everything related to the psychology of how we look. I'm Nadia, and this episode is on body confidence sport, a huge collaboration between researchers at CAR, researchers at the Tucker Centre for Research on Girls and Women in Sport, the Dove Self-Esteem Project, so the world's biggest provider of self-esteem and body confidence education, Nike, the biggest champion of athletes and sport, as well as girls and coaches from France, India, Japan, Mexico, the UK and the United States. So I don't want to give too much away, but essentially body confidence sport includes two new body image programs designed to improve girls' body confidence, self-esteem and comfort participating in sports. The first program, Body Confident Coaching, is an online program designed to help coaches create positive body image environments for girls in sports settings. And the second program is Body Confident Athletes, which is an in-person coach-led program that aims to help girls feel body confident when playing sport. I want to highlight just off the bat that both of these programs are freely available for anyone working with girls in a sports setting to access over at bodyconfidencesport.com, and the link is in our show notes. So to give you a rundown of the episode, we will be hearing from four members of the research team. So two of my colleagues at the Centre for Appearance Research, Emily and Kat, and two researchers based at the Tucker Centre for Research on Girls and Women in Sport, which is based at the University of Minnesota. I'll let them introduce themselves in just a moment, but I also just want to highlight that so many people were involved in this absolute showstopper of a project, including other members of our team here at the Centre for Appearance Research. So to include Aline, Philippa, Sharon, Mahara, Katarina. So just want to give them a quick shout out too. And with that, I want to say buckle up because it's a whopper of an episode. I did everything I could to keep it as close to an hour as possible. But let me tell you, it so easily could have been three. So we may need to have a part two at a later date. So obviously make sure that you're subscribed. And with that, let's get into it.
Hi, I'm Dr. Emily Matheson, and I'm a Senior Research Fellow, and I had the privilege of leading the CAR research team on all things body confidence sport.
Hi, I'm Kat. I'm a Research Fellow at CAR, and I was one of the lead researchers on body confidence sport, particularly leading the development and evaluation of the body confident coaching intervention.
Hi, my name is Dr. Courtney Boucher. I am the Assistant Director for Research and Programming at the Tucker Center for Research on Girls, Women, and Sport, and I'm also a co-collaborator on the Body Confidence Sport Project.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nicole Lavoie. I am the Director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota, which is situated in the School of Kinesiology in the College of Education and Human Development. And I am a co-collaborator on the Body Confidence Sport Project.
Emily, so good to have you on the podcast. We are going to cut the small talk and go straight in. I would love for you to tell us and set the scene for body confidence sport. Why do we need interventions, programs to support girls' body confidence in sport settings?
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to be a guest on the AM podcast. So first and foremost, we have so much data, approximately 20 years of research, that indicates that girls drop out of movement-based activities, so sport and exercise, at a much earlier and quicker rate than boys. And this disengagement tends to kind of stem from body image barriers and concerns that are unique to girls, again, relative to boys. And a lot of these barriers and concerns stem from the over-evaluation and objectification of girls' bodies in movement settings. But of course, we know that that happens in society more broadly. And this over-evaluation and objectification can lead to increased appearance anxiety and dissatisfaction. And in the case of sport and exercise, actually detracts from girls concentration, performance, and enjoyment of the very activity that they're supposed to be focusing on and enjoying. So in terms of why is it important that we address these body image barriers and concerns, there are so many benefits to moving our bodies regularly, so both mental and physical health benefits. But then you've also got to think about the life skills that girls can develop and enhance throughout their sporting journey. As an athlete myself, I developed so many brilliant communication skills, leadership skills, and that was through having brilliant role models within sport environments. So if we can address some of these body image barriers and concerns to help girls stay in sport and live, you know, much fuller and richer lives, then it's kind of a no-brainer. Why wouldn't we?
Oh my goodness, total no-brainer. Why wouldn't we indeed? Just as a fun question, you mentioned being an athlete. I would love for you to say a little bit more on that for our listeners.
Absolutely. So I was a swimmer and a lacrosse player. So I did swimming up until my final year of high school and was simultaneously doing lacrosse. And they offered me both amazing things, but lacrosse was ultimately a team sport. And it's actually how I met my now husband and find myself living in New York. And so, yeah, again, just these opportunities to travel through sport, meet lifelong friends, maybe meet your partner. It's, you know, there's so many cool things that I've been able to do through this really brilliant thing that is a popular pastime for so many of us.
Yeah, 100%. And I wonder if you would mind sharing what you do now. What do you enjoy? How do you enjoy moving your body now?
My relationship with movement has changed, definitely, as I've gotten older and kind of what do I enjoy and what motivates me and what do I want to seek out of it. I now love spin classes. I think it's a form of therapy for me. I love, you know, moving to music and have found some brilliant instructors here in the city who really come from a body functionality perspective and connecting with your body. So that's definitely how I love spending my time, equally doing weight classes and, again, becoming strong and really seeing what my body can achieve and coming back to, you know, what it can do is really important when I think about moving my body.
I'm so with you on the spin classes. I say to myself oftentimes, spin for sanity. There's something about like locking your feet in, surrendering yourself to the music, and you're there for those 45 minutes and you can't really think about anything else. So yeah, love that. Thank you for sharing. So I want us to get in now really fully to the mega, mega project that is Body Confident Sport. So Emily, I would love for you to tell us more about what the project is, what was involved, who was involved, what some of the various phases of the project were. I mean, I know this sounds like a big, like, 3-year timeline and there's multiple components. But if you could just do top line, big picture for me, and then we can get into the details over the course of our conversation.
Yeah, so I think there's many things that make this project mega, but the two that stand out are definitely the timeline that you mentioned, mm-hmm. and then also the partners involved that really allowed us to get the project over the line. So this was a 3-year project from inception to completion. And I think the key word there is completion. Anyone who's in the world of research knows that it can be really hard to, once you've created something amazing, to actually get it in the hands of people who need it. So we started talking about this project back in November of 2019, which is crazy to think about. And so in terms of, you know, the partners who were responsible for bringing this project to life, of course, there's the longstanding partnership between CAR and the Dove Self-Esteem Project. So that academic partnership in creating, you know, body confidence tools and really getting them out into the community. And what's unique about this project is we had a second academic industry partnership between the Tucker Center, and you'll be hearing from our team later on in the episode, and their partnership with Nike. So we have CAR and Dove bringing all the expertise around body confidence and intervention development. And then we have Tucker and Nike bringing all things sport, girls, women. So it was this match made in heaven. You had two world-renowned research centers and two leading brands who are socially driven to create change in community. And so in terms of those 3 years, it was a researcher's dream to be able to see kind of the kernel of thought come to life. And it's like, okay, we see that there's maybe room for improvement when it comes to body image in sports and girls, but what is it that we can do? So that started with very much a needs analysis. And part of that needs analysis was talking to experts in the field, particularly in industry and in research, then running a systematic review and meta-analysis and looking at, you know, the effectiveness of existing approaches. That review is now out for publication if anyone's interested. But really what we found from that was that the existing approaches were lacking, particularly when it came to being theory driven, but also incorporating stakeholder feedback into the intervention development process. So that was kind of our next step, where we then actually spoke with girls and coaches around the world to better understand what are their concerns when it came to body image in sport communities, and what could we do to provide them with support, and what could a program look like? So coupled that data from the systematic review and meta-analysis with the qualitative data from those workshops we conducted, and then we set out on creating an initial prototype. And the two prototypes we created were a direct-to-coach piece, which would educate them around body confidence and how they can become advocates within their communities, but then also a direct-to-girl, which would provide girls with the necessary knowledge and skills to be confident both on and off the field. After that initial prototype development, we then put it in the hands of girls and coaches to get their feedback. We then, of course, made initial tweaks. We then went into formal testing in the form of initial pilots of both of those programs. And that's where I believe we kind of got our first name of Body Confidence Sport, which would be the umbrella term for these two programs. And then from there, we developed Body Confident Coaching, which is that direct to coach piece, and then Body Confident Athletes, which is that direct to athlete piece. And then the next phase after piloting, again, a few more modification and tweaks, we then went into a large randomized control trial for Body Confident Athletes. And we're currently in the process of working on getting on some funding to trial Body Confident Coaching. So that brings us to the end of a 3-year journey of, you know, intervention, kind of development, evaluation, and it's a researcher's dream to see that from beginning to end.
Truly a researcher's dream, and honestly it's just a dream just to listen to you explain all of that. So Emily, thank you so much. We are going to come back to you later in this episode, and now in this moment we are going to transition to hearing from Dr. Nicole Lavoie, the director of the Tucker Center. And Nicole starts by telling me a little bit more about what the Tucker Center is, and then we start having a conversation around the Tucker Center's role within the Body Confidence Sport project.
So we are the first research center of its kind in the world that is solely dedicated to the multidisciplinary academic study of girls and women in sport. And we were founded in 1993, so we just are celebrating our 30th anniversary. And I just learned recently that most research centers housed in universities, their average length of tenure is 3 to 5 years. So most of them do not succeed, because running a research center in higher education, some mostly are on soft money. This is really difficult, but the Tucker Center has been a global thought leader because we do research that matters, that's action oriented. We do community outreach and are engaged in our local, regional, national, and increasingly international communities. And we do education of interns, students, graduate students, around upskilling them to have careers, maybe in higher ed, but increasingly my students are public scholars. So they're going out into the world and nonprofit, NGO, NGB, private or for-profit companies, and using their expertise to create systems change that way. So the Tucker Center, I mean, I could talk a whole podcast in and of itself about the Tucker Center, but I would just invite the listeners to go to tuckercenter.com. We have a lot of valuable tools and resources on there, Body Confidence Sport included, our archive of distinguished lecture series, our podcasts, our research reports. I mean, if you're writing a paper on girls and women in sport, the tuckercenter.com is your go-to one-stop shop.
That's so brilliant. It's so useful to have a one-stop shop. So we will absolutely link to the Tucker Center in our show notes. And it's great that you mentioned the podcast. When I was preparing for this conversation, I spotted that you had a podcast. And so I can't resist but asking you a little bit about it, if you could tell us a little bit about the podcast, and if you have a favorite episode that you may recommend for our listeners.
So Tucker Center Talks started because I really wanted to talk to my female colleagues and amplify their voices. And as academics, as experts in gender and sport. And so over the couple of years that I did the podcast, it was really fun to talk to a lot of my colleagues. But I think my favorite episodes were the ones where I talked at the end of the summer to our gender equity summer interns. We would do a podcast together all on the screen and talk about what they learned, what they will take forward into the world from their internship experience with the Tucker team. And if you listen to these episodes, these young women are fantastic. And their enthusiasm and passion and just smart, witty, insightful perspectives come through that just give me a lot of hope for the future. So I think those are my favorite episodes. Yeah, hands down.
I actually haven't listened to those episodes, so I am going to queue those up first thing I do after recording this episode.
Not to dismiss the conversations that I've had with my colleagues, but the hearing from these young women at the very inception of their careers, and some of them are in high school, yeah. It will really knock your socks off, I think. Because every time I listen to them, I'm like, oh, these young women are so amazing. And I do have to say, though, that the podcast has been on a pause for a couple of years because we were so busy working on body confidence sport that I just did not have the bandwidth to organize and do a podcast, which takes a lot of planning and prep work and time. So I'm hoping to reboot it soon. So stay tuned.
Oh, that's great news. I will look out for new episodes coming and definitely hear you on podcast being a lot of work that take a lot of time and planning and bandwidth. So, yeah, anyway, I want us to get into body confidence sport more now. So I wonder if you could tell me more about the Tucker Center's role on the project.
Yeah, what the Tucker team brought to body confidence sport was our expertise in the sport space, in the knowledge and the research in girls' participation and the barriers of girls' participation in and through sport. We have a report that the latest installment, we do it every 10 years, but the third installment came out in 2018, Developing Physically Active Girls from a Multidisciplinary Perspective. And that report has really positioned us as experts in this space because we pull in our affiliated scholars from all different domains of psychological, sociological, physiological, pedagogical knowledge around how do we create climates that foster, that get girls in sport and keep them there. So we brought the sport knowledge to the space where the CAR team brought the expertise in appearance research and specifically body image and body confidence and embodiment and body positivity in sport. So the two of us really was bringing the leading experts in both of these spaces to create an industry first tool. And I would also add the other thing that we brought to this project is because of the work that I've done over the last 30 years as a former coach, turned gender scholar and academic, is that one of my pieces of expertise is I have been in coaching spaces for 30 years. And I have a vast network of stakeholders in my network from the youth, college, high performance coaches around the globe. So I also bring that knowledge of knowing what resonates with coaches in terms of coach education and coach developers, and also being able to then disseminate this product into the marketplace to get people to take it.
It's so valuable to have that firsthand insight. And I actually didn't know that that was a piece of it. So out of curiosity, what did you coach?
Tennis. Yep. So I played in college and then took my love of tennis and making a difference for girls and women in sport into coaching and then into scholarship. So yeah, I coached, I was a teaching professional for decades, and then I coached youth, I coached college, and when I retired from coaching, before I went back to do my PhD, I was at Wellesley College as the head women's tennis coach.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm really glad I asked. So Nicole, I would love to hear more from your perspective in terms of why do we need to do a program like this, support girls in particular in sport settings?
Oh, so many reasons why this is important. And I think one of the reasons why I'm so excited about this tool, Body Confidence Sport, which kind of sits in the Coaching Her ecosystem, is because I would always get questions when I'm doing coach education around the world is, how do we coach girls? You're at the Tucker Center, so you must know this special piece of knowledge on how to coach girls. And I realized that the question was coming from a place of good intention, but that question in and of itself, I felt often reinforced stereotypes about coaching girls, that coaching girls was different, that coaching boys was the norm, and that coaching girls required this sort of secretive, specialized knowledge that we weren't really sure what it was, but we thought we needed it. So we know that sport can be a powerful force in the lives of girls. And when girls get the opportunity to play sport, when coaches create the right climate, it can lead to many, many positive psychosocial development, health, and occupational academic benefits. So it's important that we center a tool in the fact that coaching is coaching, first and foremost, that good coaching is good coaching. And one's gender is one variable that we should consider. So there's a whole vast knowledge of coaching science around what it means to be a good coach. So we want to coach the individual. We don't coach all girls the same. We don't coach all boys the same. We coach the individual. So it's important to know that. And the fact that girls experience the world differently precisely because they're girls, because of objectified images of girls and women in the media, because of gender stereotypes and bias, because of girls self-objectify, because girls experience sexual harassment and sexual assault more than their male counterparts, because they experience teasing and harassment and demeaning comments from fans and coaches and parents. So, and because girls receive very little information about sexual and reproductive health that can impact their ability to play sport. So there are specific barriers that girls experience because they're girls in the world, and we want to coach girls in terms of what is good coaching science. So a tool that's focused on coaching her is so important, and I'm super proud that we finally did it and did it right.
And I wonder, with all of that in mind, the coaching science principles, what of that did you bring into Body Confidence Sport?
I think what we brought into Body Confidence Sport, which was also informed by Coaching Her, which looks at girls bring their multiple identities to sport. They're girls, but they also have other identities, race, class, sexual identity, religious, spiritual identities, and that we want to look at the holistic girl, but we also want to understand that gender stereotypes and bias also impact how girls think and feel about their bodies and how girls internalize those. And I think that's what we really brought to the sports space, in addition to layering on the power of the coach-created motivational climate where coaches are meeting girls' psychological needs, in addition to how do you understand that within helping girls feel good about what their bodies can do. So there's so many layers of knowledge that are within this tool that it's hard to explain succinctly, but that was our challenge. And I think we, in the end, we did a really good job of that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you did such an outstanding job. The tools are just incredible. And I guess maybe the final point, so obviously we'll be linking to the tools in our show notes and really want as many coaches to use them as possible. But I wonder, especially, you know, hearing from you, who is this for? So it's for coaches, for athletes, but is it for all coaches? I wonder if you have, you know, what's your point of view? If someone's kind of thinking about it, but like...
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. So The tool... is we designed it for coaches of girls 11 to 17 years old. That's where we tested it. That's where we know it works. However, now that the tool is out into the world and people are using it, and I'm talking to coaches all the time, I literally am doing maybe 2 to 3 coach education pieces on this a month. So I'm getting real-time feedback from sports stakeholders, and everybody has this reaction. One, I can't believe that you created this. This is amazing. Two, is this good, you know, for parents, sport administrators, teachers? And yes, it's for coaches, but we use the term coach loosely for anybody that works with girls and cares about the health and well-being of girls. And then three, what we're finding is people want more. Well, is it good for girls younger than 7? Is it good for college athletes or older athletes or master's athletes, premenopause, postmenopausal athletes that have their own body confidence issues? And is it good for that? And the answer is absolutely. And I think we have a lot of work to do moving ahead to sort of tweak and tailor this content for those different populations.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that third point, I just think really highlights the need for body confidence for all in sports settings. And as you said, like, it's tweaks. I don't think it'll take much to tailor it to different audiences.
One surprising thing is that the men who take the tool, so I teach a principles and theories of coaching class, so I have my students take it so we can talk about it. And what comes up is like, well, this is actually applicable for men and boys too in slightly different ways. But, you know, what about boys and men? Like, yep, boys and men have body confidence issues too because of toxic masculinity. So yes, there's a whole nother tool that we could develop around that. But, you know, being the Tucker Center, our focus is on girls and women.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. So Nicole, it has been so wonderful speaking with you. Thank you so much. I wonder, before I let you go, if there's anything else you'd like to add in relation to body confidence sport.
I think my closing thought is what I want to share about body confidence sport is that oftentimes as academics or researchers in institutions of higher education, our research doesn't get used in the public to create global change-making tools. And our industry partnerships, especially when two major brands like Dove and Nike come together in a first-of-its-kind partnership, this is where the magic happens, is when we have industry-academic partnerships that can make change for girls. And that has been a real gift to amplify our work in ways that rarely ever happens in higher education.
Amazing. So that was Dr. Nicole Lavoie, Director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport. And without missing a beat, we are going to go straight back to Emily and actually also to Kat, who are going to talk a little bit about the co-creation workshops with girls and coaches that helped inform the development of these programs.
We ran 21 workshops across 6 countries, those being France, India, Japan, Mexico, the UK, and the US. We spoke with girls aged between 11 to 17 and ran separate workshops for girls, say 11 to 14 and then 15 to 17 for developmental reasons. And then we spoke to coaches separately as well. And really, what those workshops were about was kind of two parts. Firstly, we wanted to confirm or explore and both confirm some of the concerns that they felt were prominent within their communities and needed to be addressed within a program, but then also kind of really get their understanding about, you know, what some of the acceptability aspects of a program, what makes it easier to either complete or deliver. And so that was really central to those workshops as well. In terms of the findings, again, both of the papers are out, open access publications, for this piece of the project. I think what was really affirming was, irrespective of the countries, there were really universal findings for girls and coaches in terms of their experiences with body image and within sport communities. I think what was also affirming were there were different themes that came up or stronger themes in certain countries. So, for example, in India, there was a really strong theme around parental influences on allowing or disallowing girls to play sport and how girls really wanted parents to be educated about the benefits of sport because often parents had fears around girls' safety. And, you know, this fear that they were being objectified or having to show off too much of their body to play sport. So girls actually thought parents played a really key role in whether they could remain in sport. In Mexico, we actually found safety to be a real issue for girls when it came to being able to comfortably play sport. And so this really shines light on body image not being a frivolous matter. I think sometimes people think, oh, girls are just worried about how they look. And it's actually a social justice issue because some of these girls are put in situations where their bodies are objectified through the male gaze or in some instances physical safety, and, you know, as a result have to completely remove themselves from an environment and an activity because they can't put themselves at risk. So it's not just a frivolous matter of them worrying about how their hair looks on the field. It's actually by participating in some of these sports they could be putting themselves at risk of safety. So I think balancing both universal experiences, but as well as some of those larger kind of societal injustices that girls can experience globally is really important to consider in this topic as well. Another element came through this adversity that a lot of girls were universally experiencing was this sistership and this allyship with each other and in supporting or helping them overcome it. So there was this really beautiful scenario, and I say beautiful just in terms of the girls' response to one another. But one girl was worried that, you know, her uniform was too revealing and she was getting picked on by some boys within the vicinity. And another girl gave her jumper to, you know, cover herself up some more because, you know, it was either that or she just continued to feel distressed during the sports activity, or her friend and an ally was like, no, this, I'm not going to stand for this. Put a jumper, put my jumper on so, you know, you can get on with it. And we saw a lot of those examples where girls were having to advocate for themselves or advocate for one another in the face of those kind of microaggressions or, you know, in some cases much more severe forms of it. So I think girls and women learn early on to be creative in how they overcome these obstacles. But the whole point of these programs and just this broader dialogue is that they shouldn't have to. We should be creating environments that just naturally advocate and allow girls to flourish. So I think it's a really important dialogue, but we as the adults and the experts need to be doing better in how we support girls so they have to do less of the advocacy for themselves.
One thing that definitely stood out to me in terms of both what girls and coaches said is a sense of community. And so coaches said, a lot of the barriers they face in addressing body image concerns in sport is because of a lack of a supportive community. So maybe lack of support from admin or other teachers or other organizations or even sometimes parents. And then on the flip side of that, they said how important it is to rely on community and to empower other members of the community, like, again, parents, peers, teachers, school staff, in some cases, other sports organization members, to empower them to understand what an important issue body image is in sport, firstly, and then also empower them to how to support the athletes better, how to make sport more inclusive. And this stood out to me a lot, I think, because it's very aligned with what we were hoping to achieve with body confidence sport. Like, it's more than just an intervention targeted to individual girls or even to individual coaches. What we wanted to do was upskill influential members of the sports world, so coaches and then also teachers, parents and others, and to create a community of body confidence sport rather than just trying to tackle individual issues among individual athletes.
Okay, so quick mid-episode interlude. Just as a recap, so far we've heard from Emily, who's given us an overview of the Body Confidence Sport project, the two different programs, and we've heard from Nicole at the Tucker Centre, who told us a little bit more about the Tucker Centre itself, as well as that gender component really being brought in to the program, as well as the importance of this multi-stakeholder collaboration and how important that has been in terms of working together and making this project a true success. We then have heard back from Emily and from Kat, who have spoken a little bit about the qualitative co-creation workshops that were run in France, India, Japan, Mexico, the UK and the US. And that was really part of that developmental stage towards the beginning of the project. And in parallel to those co-creation workshops was the development of a coach self-efficacy body image scale, which Kat is now going to say a little bit on about what this scale captures and why it's important. We're then going to go on to hear more about the randomized controlled trial of body confident athletes. So hold tight.
So when we started developing the body confident coaching intervention, very, very early stages, we quickly realized that we will actually eventually need to evaluate whether it works or not. And there was just nothing available in the existing literature, no scales, no measures available to measure what we wanted to measure, which is this body confident coaching intervention going to be effective at changing coaches' attitudes and behaviors towards body image? So we set out to develop a measure of our own with the coach self-efficacy body image scale, and it captures four domains or four key outcomes that we were hoping to influence through the body confident coaching intervention. So the first of these outcomes is knowledge of body image and why it is important. So an example item was I feel confident in my ability to describe what body image is. The second is recognition of body image concerns among athletes. So an example item is I can recognize when an athlete feels uncomfortable in their body. The third was engagement in positive body image behaviors. So, for example, I feel confident in my ability to talk to an athlete who is exhibiting body image concerns. And then the fourth one was disengagement from unhealthy body image behaviors. So, for example, I feel confident in my ability not to comment on an athlete's body shape or size. These are just examples of items. They were definitely phrased somewhat differently and somewhat simpler. And the scale is based on the theory of self-efficacy. So as I mentioned, the items start with this, I feel confident in my ability to. So coaches kind of rate their perceived self-confidence in their ability across the four different domains. So that was a little bit about the scale. Firstly, the scale has been super beneficial for us, of course, because we didn't know how we were going to measure this key outcome of the intervention, of the body confident coaching intervention. So ultimately, we included it as our primary outcome measure for the pilot study that we did later on once the intervention was developed. And spoiler alert, the intervention was successful at changing coaches' self-efficacy. So coaches felt more confident in their ability to identify and tackle body image concerns after taking part in body confident coaching. And then just beyond kind of the research and our own research, it's also a useful tool that coaches can use for self-evaluation, to increase awareness of body image concerns. For example, in completing the tool, coaches can gain some insights into areas they most need support with. So the scale can also potentially be used in other research and in real world settings as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And if someone wanted to use that scale, so if there's a coach listening, is it available anywhere? Can they use it? How would they go about that?
Absolutely. So the article that has been published and the scale is available in the article, and the article is open access. So, you know, maybe we can link it in the podcast notes or somewhere. And yeah, so the scale can be the full scale with the items and how to score it and how to use it, etc., can be accessed there.
Stunning. Absolutely. And we can absolutely link that in the show notes. I think that'll be great. So it's really, really valuable to have that resource and to have it open access, because we know that a lot of our academic studies and things are oftentimes behind a paywall. So yeah, really great that this one is not. It's free for anyone to kind of click on and read. So definitely we'll include that in the show notes. Awesome.
Okay, so just jumping quickly in here. So that was a little bit about the self-efficacy scale. So we are getting very close to talking about the evaluation of body confidence sport. And just before we do, we're going to have Emily come back in to give us a little bit more granular detail about each of the programs. So then we can truly get into the evaluation phase.
We'll start with body confident coaching. So really the idea of that program is to increase coaches' self-efficacy in being able to address body confidence head on within their teams, but also, you know, their sport more broadly, and to really encourage them to become advocates for girls, both where it comes to body confidence, but we know body confidence intersects with so many other topics. And so there are three modules that coaches complete themselves at a self-guided, you know, rate. And we provide them with a lot of psychoeducation, but a lot of critical thinking and self-reflection to kind of help them identify maybe some behaviors that are typically normalized but are ultimately problematic, and helping them to see different ways in which we can approach some of these situations whilst really being mindful that we don't want to shame anyone. We've all been there. We've all engaged in behaviors that, you know, are not necessarily helpful either to ourselves when it comes to body confidence or to others. So I think that's a really important point to remember here throughout these conversations, is we've all been there. It's about how do we move forward once we have the knowledge and the skills. So that is a web-based self-guided program for coaching to complete at their leisure. And then we have Body Confident Athletes, which is a coach-led in-person program that is delivered to approximately 10 to 20 girls at a time. Again, consists of three sessions, and it targets risk and protective factors of body image and movement. So for example, session one is body talk in sport. So we know, you know, body talk is a tried and true kind of discussion point and way in which we can really shift the needle to kind of help girls, again, shift their focus away from what does their body look like and really starting to challenge that normalized behavior. Session two is what can our body do and experience in sport, and very much inspired by the amazing work that Dr. Jessica Oliva has done in the space of body functionality. So leaning on those principles there, and again, shifting girls' attention from what does my body look like when I'm playing a sport to what can my body do and experience, and why is that important to me? And then we finish out with session three, listening to our bodies in sport, which is grounded in attuned exercise theory and really helping girls to better connect with their bodies and understanding, you know, why it's important to listen to our body's needs and how that can really help enhance our sporting experience. So I think the other unique thing about these two programs is that from the outset, we designed them to be both complementary and standalone. The idea is that, you know, a coach could very much complete body confident coaching and then go and deliver body confident athletes to their team. And that would be a very fluid experience for coaches. But equally, they wouldn't have to have completed the coach's piece in order to deliver the athlete's piece. We really developed these programs with the user in mind and making sure it was as easy and as accessible as possible. So, yeah, that was really important during the intervention development process.
Yeah, that's really great. And I think just a reflection on that last piece about flexibility and just really giving people the opportunity to take what they need at that point in time is so, so important, because whenever we're doing programs like this, we're always balancing what's feasible. And, you know, we're all under so much like time pressure. There's so many competing demands. You want to go with what's right for right now, and then always knowing there is something else to pick up as and when you need. So really, really like that flexibility component built in there.
Absolutely. And coaches wear so many hats. And I think, and when we say coach, these programs are designed to be used by any influential adult within sporting environments and communities, but people do wear so many hats, and there's only so much capacity we have. So, you know, I think that your point there is really important. You can take what you need from this initiative as and when suits you.
Kat, so the goal is that both of the body confidence sports tools are put to the test using the gold standard approach to intervention testing, so a randomized controlled trial. And I wonder if you could just talk us through the methods.
Absolutely. So a randomized control trial, which, like you mentioned, is the gold standard of evaluating interventions, it's a type of scientific study design that we often use in psychology and other fields as well. So in the randomized control trial, participants are randomly assigned to different groups. So, for example, in our case, one intervention group, which receives the intervention being tested, so body confident athletes or body confident coaching, and then another group that's called the control group. And the control group either receives no intervention, which was the case in body confident sport, or sometimes a standard treatment for comparison. So basically, randomization is there to ensure that any differences observed between the groups are due to the intervention and not due to other potential factors. And so that way we can compare if intervention, quote unquote, works. So for body confident athletes specifically, we randomized coaches and girls to an intervention group or a waitlist control group. What a waitlist control group means is that they will be able to take part in the intervention after the trial has finished, but we won't evaluate their participation with the materials and with the content. And so coaches and girls in the intervention condition took part in body confident athletes over a period of 3 weeks. Coaches in both conditions, intervention and waitlist control, completed a survey with our outcome measures before and after the intervention period, and also 1 month and 3 months later, so that we could evaluate if changes in the target outcomes were maintained through up to 3 months after completing the intervention. And the specific outcomes we were looking at for girls in body confident athletes was body esteem, body appreciation, sports enjoyment, embodiment, and mood. So a positive and a negative effect.
Okay, that's awesome. Can I jump in and ask, putting you on the spot, what does embodiment mean?
Absolutely. That's a tricky one. Generally speaking, embodiment is a measure, to put simply, how people connect with and relate to their bodies. For body confident athletes, for our particular research, we used two sub-skills of embodiment, which I think might help explain what they actually measure. The first one is resistant objectification. So how good, or, you know, how well girls are at resisting objectification towards their bodies. And the second one we looked at was attuned self-care. So again, this is how you connect with and relate to your body. So attuned self-care looks at, you know, engagement and behaviors that, yeah, are markers of self-care. So for example, resting when you're tired, eating when you're hungry, you know, drinking when you're thirsty, etc. So those two skills were kind of what we measured. Other skills or other domains of embodiment could also include things like caring for yourself. So I mentioned self-care. It can involve kind of mind-body connection, presence in the body. And I think there's probably, we took these two domains from the experience of embodiment scale. I think it's about seven different outcomes in that one.
No, that's awesome. I'm so glad I asked, because I think we hear this word embodiment quite a lot, but I know if we always conceptualize it. So it's really helpful to know and understand the two things, the kind of two components that you used within the context of this trial. So really helpful. So thank you for explaining that. So sorry, I interrupted you mid-flow. So you were giving us the overview of the method for body confident athletes. What about body confident coaching?
Yeah, great question. So we have not yet conducted an RCT, a randomized controlled trial for body confident coaching. We recently submitted an application to ask for additional funding to be able to do so. So basically stay tuned and watch this space, and hopefully we will have an RCT soon.
Yeah, everything crossed for that funding.
Thank you.
It's such important work. We'll move on. Kat has very beautifully spoken through some methodology around what an RCT looks like and what you did. So I would love to hear from you just some of the headline results of body confident athletes.
Like any researcher, you're always waiting for those results to come through, especially after such a rigorous and extended intervention development process. So we were really excited to see that we had small intervention effects for 5 of the 7 outcomes at post-intervention. And so that included our primary outcome of body esteem, as well as our secondary outcomes of body appreciation, attuned self-care, self-objectification, and negative affect. And then with regards to the follow-up effects, so we had 1 month and 3 months, there was a mixture of findings as to whether these effects were either maintained, dipped, or bounced back at time 3 and time 4. So really promising effects, I would say, especially among a universal sample of adolescents where you have such varying degrees of body image concerns. But really what our post-hoc analyses also indicated that the intervention effects at these respective time points were higher or greater for girls who had higher baseline concerns. So really the intervention effects are occurring for the people who need it most, which is, you know, typical for body image interventions or eating disorder prevention research that we've seen before. So yeah, that paper is currently in the process of being tweaked and finalized and is hopefully going to be hot off the press in due course.
And also, just to put these kinds of results into context, said small effects, but we're not expecting to move mountains in 3-session universal interventions. So the fact that it's improving body confidence for those who need it most is absolutely the kind of result that we need. So that's really, truly an incredible result. So now we are approaching the end of this episode, but a really important piece that we haven't yet addressed is dissemination, and a crucial part of the dissemination of this project, Body Confident Sport, was the website. So next we are going to hear from Dr. Courtney Boucher, who was instrumental in getting the website together, and she starts by sharing some of her learnings with me in relation to the website.
Yeah, it was very involved, and I don't think the podcast is long enough to get into all the intricacies, but it was working with everyone from the content creators, the researchers, but also the designers and the web developers. There was a lot of different parts of this processes, and within that were a lot of learnings for me. But also the ultimate biggest learning for me was the importance of seamless collaboration. We have a saying in the Tucker Center that good work doesn't get done alone. And everything, again, from that content creation to what is the website going to look like? How do we test the website and also get it to launch? And everything in between, we saw that effective communication and teamwork was really, really essential in getting our ideas and our research into a cohesive and impactful digital platform that is really having a real effect on girls and coaches in sport.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so I'm really curious for, you know, listeners who maybe want to do something similar, create their own website. What would you say from your perspective are the key ingredients to an engaging website for coaches and athletes and people in the sports world in particular, but then maybe in general as well?
Yeah, I think that what we did really well was we knew who our website was for and we knew what our brand was. So we stayed true to that brand and really understood that this website's for the busy coach. The coach who wants to make sport better, and how can we cater to that person? So including all of this multimedia content, the videos that you see Emily in, including easy to use, well-designed guides, the activities that coaches can take to their team, and make an impact right away, the key takeaway documents. I think having those types of educational resources that are engaging not only helps get these different components to body confidence sport out into the world, but it also caters to all sorts of different various learning styles that our coaches, our users have. And the other part I would say about creating, anyone trying to think of getting an engaging website off the ground, especially as it relates to educational resources, is we were really intentional about incorporating diverse perspectives and expert insights throughout the entire process. And I think that well-rounded approach allowed us to have a very nuanced understanding of what body confidence is within sport.
Yeah, nice. I wonder if you could say a little bit more about that second piece, the incorporation of diverse perspectives.
I think we had this from the very start of the ideation of this project, of not only the diverse perspectives of our partners between the Tucker Center, Dove, Nike, and the Center for Appearance Research, but also we were really intentional about the tool of co-creating this with girls and with coaches and making sure their voices were heard. And then throughout the entire process of once we created that content with the girl and coaches in mind, of the diverse perspectives of the designers have one way of thinking about things, but the web developers have a different way of thinking about things. And all of those perspectives are really important. And how do we incorporate them to, again, make the best experience for the coaches and girls who want to use this tool?
Brilliant. Thanks, Courtney. And thank you to Emily, to Kat, to Nicole for joining me on this episode of Appearance Matters, the podcast, where we have been talking all things body confidence sport. We have condensed 3 years of work into just over an hour, I believe, of audio content. So to our listeners, I really hope you have enjoyed this episode. If you have, please, please, please remember to rate and review the show on your preferred podcast app and to share this episode with a friend. As we've mentioned multiple times throughout this episode, Body Confidence Sport, the link is in the show notes, as well as some of the papers that have been referenced as well. And with that, I'm going to play out with some of the team's highlights of the project.
For me, the biggest highlight, understandably the biggest highlight of the project, was the launch. So we launched Body Confidence Sport in October 2023, a big launch in New York. It was accumulation of 3+ years of research finally coming together. It was a very successful launch, and just seeing the impact of the project in the real world, in real time. We ran through some of the practices and activities from Body Confidence Sport with the audience, and they were very well received. So it was very fun to see. And we finished the day off with a dance as a group led by the fantastic Curve Catwalk, who are partners in the project as well. You will see some of them featured in the Body Confidence Sport materials on the website as images of coaches and girls training. And they led us through a fantastic dance routine at the end of the launch.
My highlight on the project was getting to work with such a wonderful team on such a mission-driven project. We spent years working together, and as many projects go, there are always ups and downs, but we had a mutual agreement that this had the power to impact so many girls, and it really takes a special team to be able to get something like Body Confidence Sport to come to fruition. So the highlight really was getting to work with folks like Emily, Kat, Aline, Nicole, Kelsey, who all have been wonderful colleagues and also become great friends.
And I would echo what Courtney just said. We developed wonderful collaborative professional and personal relationships with our team. And being able to do work that matters and have a lot of trust and integrity with each other when things got hard. And the fact that we did this mostly during the pandemic, where we were all juggling a lot of additional roles and responsibilities and stresses, I think was an additional highlight for me. And lastly, the most important thing for me, in addition to the relationships developed, was I can see the impact the tool is making on everyone that comes in contact with it. Everybody has a story, some heartbreaking ones, of their own journeys with their body confidence in sport. So it is a needed and worthwhile tool.
I think, you know, obviously the launch was a extremely exciting event, but I think it was symbolic in so many ways because this project, 3 years with various highs and lows associated with it, but I think it was also the coming together of a core partnership group who remained unchanged for 3 years, and it was a woman-led project group that we, you know, we met weekly pretty much for 3 years. And in that time, there were births, there were marriages, people moved countries, and sadly, some people lost loved ones during that time. So, and we had a global pandemic. So I just think, in all honesty, it was the, I think, is it 8 women that were on those calls every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, like, they really provided me with such a grounding force, and I'll be forever thankful for those relationships that we developed and just seeing what we were able to create together. It's, yeah, it'll be one of the most special projects I think I've ever been a part of, and it's going to be really hard to beat that experience.